0141 951 1025. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Good evening and welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard as we look back on Scottish Cup weekend and ahead to an unbelievably big week in the Scottish Premiership. Rangers will play Celtic in the next round of the Cup after beating Queen's Park and Dundee in dramatic fashion respectively. Falkirk were the final team through, getting past Stenhouse Muir after extra time. There's a bit of a local one between St Mirren and Partick Thistle, and Andy Halliday's Motherwell will need to wait, potentially a trip to Dunfermline, but Aberdeen lie in wait, and we don't know who goes through between Dundee United and Spartans either. But other than that, let's hand over to Andy Halliday and Roger Hannah ahead of a huge week.
We thought it was going to be a Scottish Cup weekend without a shock, and then Lee Miller pulled Rangers versus Celtic out the hat last night. Celtic now face four straight away games: Stuttgart, Rangers, Aberdeen and Rangers again next month. But before all that, Gordon, we've got the small matter of an Edinburgh derby tomorrow night. We've got your beloved Motherwell at home to Rangers headlining a Wednesday night card, and we've got Rangers at home to Hearts headlining another bumper weekend. As Andy Halliday might say in his latest advertising campaign, this is not just football, this is M&S football, majestic and scintillating.
That's not bad. You must be overrun with all the games you had to cover on Saturday.
Saturday was interesting. Elgin and Partick Thistle was the pick of the bunch for us.
Is Alice McConnell home from Elgin?
No idea. Probably not. But it's good to have the next round of the Cup to look forward to. And as Roger says, what about this midweek?
Unbelievable. There's, like you say, no major shocks over the weekend. We now have the quarterfinal draw, the pick of the bunch, obviously being Rangers versus Celtic. But listen, we're now in a period where the next 10 days to 2 weeks have huge ramifications on where this title is going to end up.
0141 951 1025. Get your calls in, please. You look back on the games at the weekend, I suspect many of you will want to look forward to that draw. What do you make of the fact that Rangers will play Celtic at Ibrox in the next round of the Cup, and it comes right around the time they meet each other in the league as well? Get all your thoughts in there. If you want to look back on the games, Rangers fans, I'm sure you expected to win. All of our pundits predicted that you would win, but 8-0, does that add an extra sort of gloss, an extra layer of a delight for you? Who stood out, who did the job, who impressed you the most? Let's get all the thoughts in there. Celtic fans, you were put through the ringer. Talk about late drama. There were a few interesting controversies and talking points within that game as well, so we'd love to hear from you on those on 0141 951 1025, and anything else at all. Look back, look forward, do what you like, but please do give us a call whilst we wait for the calls to come in. It's actually a shame, this is the first time in a fortnight the three of us have been together. None of us were here on deadline day for very different reasons. You've been well, all good? I bet you were up for the Super Bowl last night, surely.
Yes.
What was the best bit? Bad Bunny?
No, Bad Bunny was not the best
bit.
I have to say, no. It was a wee bit one-sided. I'd almost got my prediction right. I said in the show on Saturday, 30-18 to the Seahawks. It finished 29-13, so I'm reasonably pleased. I'm claiming that.
There's no end to this man's talent.
A one-sided win and a deserved win. The best team in the NFL this season.
And how have you been? Last time we had you on here, we found out about your new career as a fashion influencer.
Yeah, that's right,
aren't you?
Listen, when the show had ended that night, I was just waiting for the offers to stream in, but unfortunately not came. Over the last couple of weeks, I've been slightly surprised of it. Don't be looking at that screen.
Have we still got something
else? Come on, look at this.
What I want to know is, have you influenced?
What is going on?
Have you influenced Andy yet?
I've not seen many people in Glasgow with that jumper over the last couple of weeks.
Have you not, though?
I was just about to bring up, right, I have never seen him in a hoodie. He must have had a late night.
I know this doesn't work on the radio, so for those who are watching the live stream, I've had a treat. But Andy Halliday in his M&S campaign was sporting a lovely jumper, and Roger Hannah's gone out and bought it. Roger, no offence, I think it looks better on him than it does on you.
I think it does. I was expecting the Haggis Neeps and Tatties to come with it, but when it was delivered, not just a jumper.
You look very good, by the way.
Are you sure? That's not the word I would
use. Did you use my code?
I did use your code. And it, by the way, it works perfectly. Type straight into the M&S website, boom.
Do you know what's funny? Like, right after the show, last Tuesday, Roger phoned me dead excited and he said, I've bought the jumper that Andy was the influence, so I'm going to get it on. And I said, how did you find the exact one? He said, because you read out the product code on the show. So he typed
it. I can't believe I've not put two and two together. I seen him rock up in a hoodie. I should have known.
Do you know what was even better? You had your back totally turned to him when you were saying, I've not seen many people, and I could see him unzipping the jumper.
You were kind of like a Cheshire Cat over there.
Anyway, let's get back to the football after the nonsense. Result of the weekend. Let's be serious. Come on.
Well, no major shocks, but when you're fifth in the championship, had a pretty up and down season, and you're into the quarterfinals of the Scottish Cup, I'm going to give my result of the weekend to Dunfermline.
Okay, no shocks really. So you do have a tough task, Roger.
I think you have to go Rangers, don't you? It was unlikely lightning was ever going to strike twice for Queen's Park, but I don't think many of us suspected Rangers would turn up yesterday and score eight goals.
Goal of the weekend.
We had a fair catalogue, must be said. I'm going to go to Ethan Hamilton. Ethan Hamilton could have won a couple of awards. I thought he was terrific at Celtic Park. But his goal had a bit of everything. Picks up the ball in the middle of the park, drives by the Celtic midfield, gets onto his left foot, and I love the trajectory of the ball as it hits into the net. Always rising, unbelievable strike. Put Dundee deservedly 1-0 up, but we all know what happened in the end.
I think for putting producer John out of his misery at Oakleview last night, we might have to go for Brad Spencer of Falkirk. Steny were terrific, supremely organised by Gary Naismith, all the way to extra time. Not a bad hit by Spencer.
Howler of the weekend?
Well, I'd actually planned on seeing Callum Ferry, but when I've just seen his Roger jumper. Take off his hoodie, I might change it for trying to look like myself, but I'm going to stick with Callum Ferry. I feel bad. He was the hero last year. He produced the heroics at Ibrox with the penalty save in the last minute to put Queen's Park through. But when you can see the eight goals, a couple of poor mistakes individually within that, so I've got to give him the award, unfortunately.
Yeah, this time last year on the Monday, we had him on the show. He phoned in. I don't think he would answer the phone.
And he was winning a different award this time as well.
Yeah, your howler, Roger.
I'm not sure if it's a howler, but I think we have to give some recognition to friend of the show, Lee Miller. It was the look in his face, Gordon, when he realised he had pulled out Rangers v Celtic and didn't know whether this was a good thing or a bad thing.
I have to say, in defence of our friend of the show, Lee Miller, I've not seen anyone get so much recognition for being the person that does the draw before. I've never heard that person being blamed or credited as such.
Not at all, or credited.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? They don't usually reference who physically picked the ball out as often as they have this time.
It was just it was the look in his face last night. It was absolutely praise. The highlight of the cup weekend.
Did we find out, now they do the rehearsal, Dodd, did we find out? Because almost if he dropped a wee hint that he did the same in the rehearsal.
No, you've got to get your odds sorted. Okay. The chances of that happening be slim. Anyway, where does that leave us?
It leaves us with our
top performer. Go on, who was it?
I think if you have five goal contributions in any game of football, regardless of opposition, to do it in the first half, add in a hat-trick in there and add in your right back, I'm going to give it to James Tavernier. A lot of questions this year, you know, should he be in the starting lineup? Is he the best option for Rangers at right back? In domestic football, in these types of games, he certainly is. And he showed why. Like I said, five goal contributions and an almost fortunate hat-trick, shall we say.
Is he getting that, definitely?
No, for me, but listen, you take whatever you get given. Madueke didn't get it the week before, did he?
No, I'm not sure.
Corner at Leeds.
Right, yeah. Round us off, Roger Hanna, top performer.
I'll go for Dunfermline's Chris Kane. Just when Daz thought on Saturday that his dear friend Fraser Wishart was facing extra time at East End Park, up came Chris Kane off the bench to see off Kelty Hearts and put Dunfermline into a home quarter final against Aberdeen or your boys.
01419511025. That is the number that you need, so please get in touch and let us know what is on your mind. You've got so many choices. You've got big cup ties to look back on, and what about this midweek? Absolutely incredible. So much to look forward to, Roger. How decisive could the next couple of days be, never mind couple of weeks?
Well, you know that by Sunday night, Gordon, either Rangers or Hearts or both will have dropped something. They can't get through to Sunday night with maximum points. It opens up an opportunity for Celtic, who have got games against the bottom two, Livy and Killy, between now and then. So Celtic, who currently sit third, will feel this is a week that they can make up some ground on one or other of the teams above them. It's huge for Hearts. They lost to Hibs the last time. They couldn't countenance doing that in front of their own fans tomorrow night. Then they go to Ibrox. Their record against Rangers this season has been exemplary, Could they do it again? So at every turn, with every list of fixtures, there are huge games that are impacting this three-way title race.
And then more so, like you says, the fixtures that we've got this midweek. You know, I guaranteed the last time that Celtic and Motherwell could potentially be a game of the season. I think everyone agreed. I think you've got to expect another cracker on Wednesday night when a huge tie at Firth Park. And then, you know, Hearts have been the summit of the pack for a long period of time. You know, it's starting to see chinks in their armour with obviously injuries and a couple of drop points. They've now got another massive Edinburgh derby. It's been two entertaining Edinburgh derbies this season. Both for very, very different reasons, but certainly some big games to look forward to.
Ian is a Rangers fan in the city centre who was first through. What's your point tonight, Ian?
I'm starting to think that Rangers get, obviously, they look at the start of the season, at 7 or 8 games, whatever, they were out of the title race already. It was a disaster. Then they've got themselves back into it. And over the last 2 or 3 weeks, it looks like, if you believe in this kind of stuff, it looks like the stars are aligning for Rangers to win the title, because the Hearts players getting injured, I know that can benefit Rangers or Celtic or whoever plays them, but with that happening and then Celtic, I don't think they've had a great transfer window, and they've told Celtic out the hat to play at Ibrox. They'll have to go to Ibrox twice, and they're going to have 4 away games as well. And if Rangers can't win the title with the signings they've got and the way Celtic are just now, then I know Hearts are obviously, they're probably, I don't know, they might be the favourites, but they've got their problems as well, and I think Rangers have got the least problems out of the other two. So I mean, if Rangers don't win it, I can't see us ever winning it, honestly.
So you're confident about the cup tie, certainly, in that kind of double header you've got coming up?
Yeah, well, I mean, when you're playing Celtic, you know, anything can happen, and we've got to take care of Motherwell. They're obviously a massive threat in Wednesday. It's not that I'm only just looking at those 4 games with Celtic, but that's going to take a lot out of Celtic. And if Celtic go to Ibrox and win those 2 games, then if they're going to win the cup or the league or both, whatever, then they'll deserve it and Rangers won't. But I think Rangers couldn't ask for any more than to go on and win this title, to be honest with you. And I don't know what way you see it.
What did you make of the draw? Because it takes a certain draw for the draw itself to be the talking point the next day on this show, Roger Hannah. It very rarely happens. It happens on this occasion.
Yeah, I think it's a good draw for Rangers. If you look at it, Hearts are out the cup, Hibs are out the cup, either Aberdeen or Motherwell are going out the cup, the rearranged game a week on Wednesday. If Rangers are going to win the Scottish Cup, they're going to have to beat Celtic somewhere, and you would think they have a better chance of beating Celtic in a one-off game at Ibrox than they do at Hampden. The record in the league against Celtic of late has been really good. The record at Hampden against Celtic in cup competitions of late has not been really good. Just think back to the League Cup semi-final, you know, Asgard sent off, Celtic winning it in extra time. You go back to the Scottish Cup final when Adam Ida scored the goal late on. There was a Scottish Cup semi when Jota scored the only goal. So even the League Cup final year before, 3-3, and Celtic winning penalties when Ridvan Yilmaz misses. So at Hampden, it's not going well for Rangers. I think Danny Rowell will be happy that his shot at Celtic is at Ibrox in a one-off. And this time, you know, you go back to, we mentioned it in the show on Saturday, Gordon, the Mark Wilson game in 2011. That was a game at Ibrox that finished 2-2 and it went to a replay. No replays this time. The game will be settled at Ibrox. So you would think that is Rangers' best chance.
What did you make of the draw? The man who pulled the balls, he's already been in touch. He's gone into hiding. He's newfound fame. Just so much publicity around that guy today.
Yeah. Listen, I don't disagree with Roger. I do think it is a good draw for Rangers, but I also think it's a great draw for everyone else, because, you know, quite one rightly he says that if you're going to go and win the cup, yeah, chances are you're going to have to beat Rangers or you're going to have to beat Celtic. So in a season where St Mirren have already won the League Cup, Hearts are sitting top of the league, I don't think you can now discount an Aberdeen, a Motherwell, a Partick Thistle, St Mirren, Falkirk. So I think it just opens it up even more so now. You've seen Hearts, obviously, top of the table, out the previous round, Hibs the same. I think there'll be a lot of people, not just Rangers and Celtic fans, that were excited with the draw last night.
It feels like the confidence around you and your fellow Rangers fans overall has grown pretty quickly, Ian.
Yeah, it was when Danny Rowe came in, obviously it was but he was unknown, and it was a bit of a slow burner. But yeah, I mean, he's got our hopes up, and I don't think the Rangers fans are thinking we're going to win the Scottish Cup and we're definitely going to win the league. But to be in the position that we're in, and we, as I said, with the Celtic and Aberdeen game getting called off and then getting squeezed into the games in between when they're playing Rangers and Stuttgart and that, I think that's breeding. I mean, maybe it's false hope, I don't know, but I don't see how Rangers can sort of go wrong. They just couldn't ask for any more. And I think the Rangers fans, yeah, a lot of them will think that the Rangers are going to go on and win a title, and they're entitled to think that. Myself, I'm still not 100% sure. It can go Hearts, it could go Rangers, or Celtic, I don't know. But
you said you didn't see how Rangers could go wrong a minute ago. Now you've thrown all three of them back in the hat.
No, what I'm saying is, like, if Rangers don't, right, in my opinion, if Rangers don't go on and win the title, then they won't deserve to win the title.
What did we learn then? You know, if we're talking about bigger picture, because we are talking about the title, but it was the cup yesterday, and I suppose at this stage it all becomes entwined. Rangers were favourites to beat Queen's Park. We all thought they would do it. We all thought they would do it comfortably, and they did. Does it become a point though, where like it takes a certain scoreline to make you sit up and take notice? And I assume that point is considerably before 8.
Yeah, yeah. It takes a certain scoreline, but I also think it takes a certain performance levels, especially from individuals that have just been brought into the building. You just pointed out at the top of the show that the last time we sat together was 2 weeks ago. At that moment in time, I always felt that the January transfer window was going to have a huge bearing on who could potentially win this league. I think there's no doubt whatsoever that Rangers have came out in a much stronger position in February than they were in December. Now, I think you could argue the same case with Celtic, given I think they've added in players in problematic positions. I think they've got certainly got more depth, but I think individually Rangers' four signings that they've made, I think, have started pretty strongly. I actually think you could make a case that the biggest profile at the most, Scove Olsen, has probably been the quietest out of the four. So I think that Rangers are now in a much stronger position to have a big say in this title race. And I think Celtic fans will probably feel the same as well, given the areas they've strengthened.
What can you learn, again, in a home game against lower league opposition? Can you take away conclusions that you project onto the rest of the season?
It's interesting, because I heard Danny Rowe, both after the game in Porto, which Rangers lost, and the game at Easter Road, which Rangers drew, talking about the need to be more clinical in the opposition box. And they've just had two home games in 5 days where they've scored 13 goals. So he's definitely added something at that top end. I know what you mean about Scove Olsen, Andy. Naderi looks a better player than Danilo. Scove Olsen looks as if he's definitely going to add something. They've got competition at left back now with Romans. Chukwuani's come in, scored a very good goal yesterday at the end. He's compensating for the injury to Conor Barron at the minute, so they are strong. We've seen less of the Celtic new signings, but there were indications on Saturday that they've deepened and strengthened Martin O'Neill's hand as well.
01419511025. Keep the calls coming. We'll speak to you next.
Taking your calls on Scottish football. 01419511025. This is Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Andy Halliday and Roger Hanna are here, about to be joined on the line by Kevin, who's a Celtic fan. How are you, Kevin?
Bad, Gordon, not too bad.
What are you thinking?
Evening panel. Yeah, I was just looking to see what the panel's views were on the refereeing and the Celtic, some of the refereeing decisions in the Celtic Dundee game on Saturday night. Specifically the one where KT got kicked in the face. And I suppose we all remember the season before last where Yang done something which wasn't nowhere near as bad and got sent off against Hearts. Saturday night it wasn't even VAR'd, and KT was on the ground for the best part of 3 minutes, so there was plenty of time for VAR to look into it. It was just discounted.
Just that. Let's bust that myth very quickly. It's becoming one of my. It looks at it. Looks at everything. Who would have looked at it? What people maybe mean is they didn't go to the monitor, so it would have been looked at. Anyway, that's a small point. Should it have been a red?
No, I don't think so. I go back to Austin Trusty and Jack Burton in the cup semi-final. Probably didn't think it should have been a red. Just as well it happened, though, because it allowed the added time to be on for Adamu to score the equaliser, send it the extra time. Otherwise, the game would have been over a couple of minutes before Adamu scored. It's a sore one for Kieran. I hope he's okay. I don't know whether it'll be ready. Sirachi coming back is a boost because it gives Martin O'Neill options. And Kieran Tierney played his part in the win because he got that one off the line about 5 or 10 minutes before the Adamu equaliser, and if Dundee had scored a second goal at that stage, it would have been all over.
So not a red for you?
I didn't think so.
Andy?
Yeah, it wasn't a red card for me either. I think Kieran Tierney's head was quite low in terms of the position of the ball. He tried to attack with his head. It was almost like a diving header. I think Congreve makes a natural attempt to try and play the ball, and he was just a split second late. Again, I think it's a sore one for Kieran Tierney. Hopefully he's okay. It was obviously great to see that he gets up and walks off the pitch by himself, but nah, for me, no red card.
How does this work, though? Because, well, Kevin mentions Yang, which I knew would come up, and we're now all kind of familiar with the terms used, and we talk about endangering an opponent, and that means red card. You can see why people say that, surely?
You can. We had a really good learning experience after that Old Firm Hampden semi-final because Stephen McLean booked Trusty. VAR had a look at it, backed up the decision. You went on to the Willie show. Willie backed the decision as well. And it's all to do with the sort of force.
To disagree slightly,
I think the big thing was people didn't think the Trusty tried to play the ball.
Well, so hold on. Trusties would have been, if it was a red card, for violent conduct. This would have been a red card for serious foul play. So slightly different, just to be pedantic about it.
I think it all comes down to the eye test. It's just, you know, what people feel. And again, Steve McLean and the VAR got the backing of Willie Collum because it was kind of subjective. And I would imagine who was the ref? Was it Ross Hardy? The Celtic game on Saturday? I'm trying to remember. He was backed by the VAR. And I would think when you go on to the VAR review show with Willie, I'm sure Willie will back the decisions of the officials again.
Kevin, do you think, I suppose the difficulty with these is, because you see challenges like that where, so you think any contact to the head with the boot should be a red?
By the rules of the game, but I disagree with Andy that Ketty's head didn't exactly dip down. He didn't duck into the, do you know what I mean, to the tackle as such. You know, I thought Ketty was quite upright, you know, but what my problem is that VAR they just discounted it, didn't even look at it.
They do, though. That's the thing. Eventually we'll hear it and you'll see it. They don't just discount it. You know, they'll have looked at it and come to the conclusion that it's not a clear and obvious error. Now, by the way, you're allowed to disagree with that all day long. That's what we're here for. But they won't have, like, not looked. Do you know what I mean?
My other point, if you don't mind, is the one where the linesman, where the ball, you've seen it down in the corner where Douglas Ross, was he doing the line?
Yep.
So that's just blatant. And, I don't understand how anyone can actually legislate for that.
I wasn't convinced that was out. I would agree with you, Kevin.
He may as well have been taking corners for Celtic the other night because he was virtually standing in front of our players.
The problem's the right word, Andy, but that is, I don't think it looks out.
No.
And you think it's also one of those that VAR just can't really do much about, and I don't know what you do from that. Like, it's what more can you say about that bit of the debate? You know, like, especially when it's in or out, it should be black or white. You can never totally tell. It didn't look out to me.
I can understand why Kevin would feel aggrieved about that situation. Like you said, I don't think there's too much in the way that, you know, VAR can get involved. We've seen a couple of these instances where it's not conclusive. Mm-hmm. Like you said, I do agree that you can feel aggrieved by it, but no, in terms of the tier they want to stick by it, I don't think it's a red card.
What do you make of the game itself, Kevin? Some late drama for you?
Yeah, exactly, but a win's a win in the cup, you know what I mean? When you look at the history books in years to come, it'll be Celtic beat Dundee 2-1. Performance will go out the window, and I think that's the case for us till the end of the season. Martin O'Neill said it umpteen times, it's about getting results. That's,
I think, especially in the cup, it's really
even in the league as well. That's all, as a Celtic sport, that's all I'm interested in, is results at this stage of the season.
It was it was obviously very, very late. Great moment for a new signing to come off and score in that come off the bench and score in that type of circumstance. Yeah. And they, look, over the last few years, Celtic have been good at this, scoring when they had to score, but it looked like maybe Saturday wouldn't be the day for a while, didn't it?
Yeah, I watched the game. I thought Dundee were really impressive. I thought they picked the right moments of when to press, when to be compact. I thought individually they done extremely well. And you quite rightly point out that I feel Celtic have made a great habit over the years of going right to the dying embers of the game and scoring goals in the last minute. We've already seen it in occasions this season when Martin O'Neill in his first interim spell with St Mirren away and on a day where Celtic weren't particularly great. But I must say, having watched the game, I didn't think at any point, you know, history books will tell you otherwise, but I just didn't see that late goal coming. I thought it was just going to be one of the occasions where you were going to talk about it was a really off day for Celtic. Dundee done extremely well and get through the tie 1-0. But that's what Junior Adame was brought in for big moments to make a difference at the top end of the pitch. And it was, for me, it was great wing play down the left hand side, and Brad Halliday, who I thought was almost faultless for 90 minutes. It was the first occasion that he let his winger beat him on the outside, put in the cross, and you've got to say, brilliant finish, improvised finish, and took it to extra time, and Celtic did a great job of carrying the momentum early into extra time and get that early goal.
Listen, I agree. I actually was one of those games where I didn't really see that goal coming at the end from Celtic. Really well worked goal, and Martin O'Neill deserves credit for going to his bench. But easy to stick with Van Schirra, who had started quite well for Celtic, brought him off. On came Adamu, Konecty thrown on as well. They really did turn the game in Celtic's favour. You know, you feel sort of a bit sorry for Dundee.
Dundee were
goal.
Good, weren't they?
Yeah, smashing goal by Ethan Hamilton. They could have had a second goal. They gave Stephen Presley absolutely everything they had. But as soon as you saw the equaliser, you knew how the game was going to go. How many times do you think Hugh Keevans wrote and rewrote his column for the Sunday newspaper?
A few.
He's
got a new laptop as well, so he'd have been struggling to come to terms with how to work it.
There would have been smoke coming off the keys.
Get a new one, so he did. Thank you very much to Kevin. What about Michael? How are you, Michael?
Hi, thanks for putting on the show, and good evening, pal.
Oh, hey, what are you thinking?
I wanted to back up with the fella just before saying, I thought it was a red, but as you said there, it could have worked out for us the end with extra 2 minutes. You know, I mean, I was quite amazed it went to 9 minutes, but you know, it was literally the last kick of the ball. It's varying, just general. I don't like it. I really don't. There was an instant even down in England with Haaland, which was a ridiculous decision down there as well. But up here, it's just there's too many things happen, and then the same thing happens, and sometimes it's a red, a yellow. It's not consistent. It's not. And that's my point. It's really not consistent, and it's wasting games. I mean, you're up there and your team scores a goal, especially an Old Firm game, and you're up there dancing about, you know, and hugging one another, and the next thing, VAR, and it's chopped off. It's raiding the game. Okay, I suppose that something is half an inch offside, or maybe it's more penalty. Just accept it and go on, mate. You know, I liked it better the old way. That's my point.
Yeah, which sounds great.
Just accept it and go on, except, with it. Are you new to this show,
that's
Michael?
What I was going to say, except we didn't do that. And if there wasn't VAR yesterday or Saturday, we're still having the same phone calls arguing about the Kieran Tierney head knock.
You touched Michael on events at Anfield at the end last night. All I could think about as Erling Haaland and Dominic Szoboszlai were rolling about in the penalty box, thinking, imagine this was an old friend. The ball's trickling into the net. What's happening? What's the ref doing? What's the VAR doing? What's going to happen? I'm not sure we're built for that kind of thing up here, Gordon.
Yeah, because are we going to talk about a Man City Liverpool decision on the show? I don't know.
Not for me.
Maybe as a wider point, as Jim says, what it has done is you're now chasing a level of perfection that probably doesn't exist. That's the thing. People maybe thought that we wouldn't debate decisions very naively, but you know, you still have to. And then even that yesterday, then it's probably a really good example of the letter of the law. There has been followed to a T with the top refs in European football, full time, all your cameras, you know, all the stuff that we hear. It is been followed to a T there in that game. You were still not happy with it because it feels wrong. So you've got that kind of like the rules versus what the spirit should feel like as a football fan. Don't want to labour an English game too much, but it was actually an interesting one to sort of sum up where football is.
Yeah, definitely. And I've been fortunate enough to be on this show pre-VAR, And we certainly still had the same phone calls on a Monday, you know, bemoaning refereeing decisions or decisions that went against your own club. And the fact of the matter is, you're right, the majority did ask for it. You asked for some sort of intervention and going back to look at, you know, key incidents within games. I get both sides of the argument. I've always kind of been pretty clear with mine. And mine's has never been against, you know, referees or decisions. It's always just been a generalisation around the entertainment value of the game. Now, as I've already told you, I have continuously watched English Premier League football this year and been disappointed. So I actually turned it off after 75 minutes.
You missed it?
I missed, oh, for goodness apparently, sake, a really good last 15 minutes of the game, then the incident towards the end as well.
Thank you very much to Michael. What about Jim? Let's get his take. Hi, Jim. You all right?
Yeah, I'm fine, thanks.
What are you thinking?
I'm just thinking about the decision, the explanation for the penalty it wasn't given for Vanchara. Because the explanation they gave was a pull at the penalty.
Yep.
But it pushed them. So I can push somebody onto the road, but if I let them go before they hit the... I can walk them to the edge of the pavement. If I let them go before on the road, that's acceptable. A push is a push.
Jim, I'm trying not to be cheeky here, but on what planet is that analogy comparable?
Right. Well, how...
But what's it got to do with roads and... What do you mean?
Right, I know. But how can you push someone and it's not a penalty, but if you pull them, that is a penalty?
Right. It's, to be fair, it's to do with, obviously, the way that... Yeah, the decision is so.
Now getting introduced to the green and white cross code.
When referees the world over, I assume, are asked to judge a push in the box or a tackle. In fact, let's go the other way. A pull, if the pull starts outside the box but continues inside the box, that can still be a penalty. For everything else, tackles, pushes, nudges, whatever, it's the initial point of contact. So. That's just...
It's a wee bit subjective, isn't it? Because you can grab someone, but you need to sort of let them go before it becomes a...
Again, let's cut to the chase. Do you think that was a penalty or not?
I wasn't convinced it was.
So you think the point of contact, because whether Jim likes it or not, or I like it or not, that's what you have to go on, is the point of contact.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, rightly or wrongly, feel free to suggest your new rules for the game. But hold on, you thought the point of contact was outside the box.
Yeah, and we had a great example of it. And the penalty given the other Saturday night at Tannadice when it was Dundee United and Hearts was it Ryan Strain on Claudio Braga, who's going outside, he's not bursting into the box, he's going out the box from in to out. The challenge is on the line, he falls outside the box, but the penalty's correctly given.
What did you think? Because it's obviously so close. This is the thing we do, but you know, if you want, you'll tell your, that's definitely in, and this is an absolute disgrace. And then people, whereas the first point should be to acknowledge. It's certainly close, and you have to go, where is the point of contact? Did you think the point of contact was inside or outside?
I thought the point of contact was outside the box. So ultimately, I think the correct decision was made. Now, you can have grievances with the law, but no, you talked about following the letter to a T. I think they got it right.
Because obviously, it can look like the feet. Is it fair to say the feet
one of the angles that the feet was on the line, but the hands on his back was outside. So listen, it's extremely marginal.
Jim, just to clear up, do you have an issue more with the way the rule is, or did you think that was definitely inside?
His feet were on the line, which is inside the box.
Where were the hands on the back? Well, that's the key thing.
Right. Well,
but you're allowed to say inside if you think that was inside. Don't let me stop you.
No, I think he was still inside because he still had his hands on him.
Where's the initial point of contact?
Yeah. But why should it matter if it was, the Celtic player was still impeded?
But that's why it would be a free kick, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
One for IFAB. Get IFAB on the phone right now. Maybe they'll call during the break. 0141 951 1025, and we'll speak to you next.
Clyde One. For Valentine's.
On Friday, it was Mum Catherine who won Make Me a Winner. She says she's going to pay off her mortgage and treat her son. That sounds like a good plan. This week, the stakes are going up $450,000. It's tax-free. Get involved. Text YES to 61025. Texts are $250 plus your standard network rate. You can enter at makemeawinner.co.uk. You'll find all the rules there. for this network competition as well. Or call 03434 269 340, and the calls are charged at a standard rate over 18s only. Lines close 5pm Friday, so text yes to 61025.
Number one for football in Glasgow and the West. 0141 951 1025. Clyde 1 Super Scoreboard.
Andy Halliday and Roger Hanna are here at 0141 951 1025. If you want to get involved, please do. Loads to get through from the weekend. Said earlier on in the show, it needs to be quite a eye-catching cup draw for the draw itself to be the talking point. You could say we've got that, Rangers against Celtic coming up, and a big midweek in the Premiership as well. This was also the weekend that Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain signed for Celtic, by the way. It just feels like a long time ago, because so much happens in this mad world that we've got. So if you've any thoughts there left over, you never know. Do we see him getting a debut this midweek? Let us know what you are thinking. 0141 951 1025. You can send us a message, a tweet, whatever you want. Get in touch like Ian in Blantyre has done. Hi, Ian.
Hi there, how are you doing?
Good, Ian. What's your point tonight?
My point is, you keep going on about the point of contact is outside the box. The point of contact's not a foul to touch somebody. It's a contact. Look, the push is the foul. And when it pushes him, he's inside the box.
Listen, I get that, Ian. I suppose it was in relation to how do you judge it. You know, if you're trying to come up with a set of rules and a set of guidelines and go about a consistent decision-making process, how else do you do it apart from the point of contact?
Well, you'd go by the push.
That's what I'm saying, right? So when do you know when the push begins then? Does the arms need to be extended? Is it when the arms start to get extended? Do you see what I mean?
Even if
we forget Celtic for a minute, right? Just talk about any incident like this. Can you not at least see why the point of contact would just be the kind of easiest blanket to do that?
That's not a foul to touch somebody.
I know that, but I'm talking about the sort of realities of trying to judge that, because you're saying when he starts to push, how do you determine when the push begins? That's tough.
You look at his arms have moved forward and he shoves him in the back.
I think again, like, it's going to the question that you gave Jim before. It's, do you have an issue with the decision or an issue with the law? Again, it sounds like Ian has an issue with the law, which is completely fair, but the decision by the letter of the law is the initial point of contact.
Because that's the point I'm trying to make. You know, and Ian might think in this occasion he can see where the push begins. Yeah. But I'm talking about if you're trying to make it black and white, I'm not saying I like this, but if you were trying to bring some uniformity to it, you would kind of have to make it at the point in which the hands go onto a back. Yeah. Because then what? So some people push, it's a wee push where your arms don't fully extend, or it's a big push where your arms do extend. If we think it's a minefield already, that sounds...
What we've kind of learned about you this season, thanks mainly, and I'm not taking the mickey, to your show, Gordon, to your other show, The Valley View, it's where refs get it wrong, because Willie Collum doesn't hide away from it. If the refs get it wrong, he says they get it wrong. I don't think this is one that Willie will come out and slam his referee. I think Willie will look at it the way he's looked at a few this season, that it's kind of subjective. You look at it, there's contact there. As Ian says, contact isn't a foul, but how can you be sure, you know, is that
be sure of when the push begins?
The start of the push, or is the start of the push slightly after the initial contact? It's almost impossible for these refs to get that right. I think the ref gave it a certain way, the VAR backed him, and I think Willie Collum will back him as well.
Do you not think it is easier, Ian? If I'm not saying it's not flawed, not for a second saying it couldn't potentially be flawed, but easier to judge where contact begins rather than where a push begins.
Is that not what VAR is for? So that you can slow it down and you can see?
But again, there are going to be limitations to that. How do you determine where a push begins, where a certain element of force becomes too much, or where the weight on somebody goes from normal contact into foul? Can we at least concede that? That would be very tough to tell.
You keep going on about it. I just don't think it's a contact sport, so I don't think you can give a foul, say, because he touched him outside the box.
Sure, but so, that goes back to what I'm saying, where in any game, in any country, anywhere, under IFAB rules, they all try and do it from the point of contact. You know, like, it's not...
I don't get that then, because it's a contact sport. You can put your hands on somebody outside the box or other place. So any touch outside the box is a foul then?
But I mean, obviously not. I'm not, like, no one's suggesting that, are they?
I just I think it's quite easy to see when the shock happens, because he extends his arms forward and pushes him in the back. But he puts his hands on him when he's outside. He doesn't push him there. You see him, he takes a step and then he pushes him.
The two hands go into the back, don't they, first? So it's like, it's like a worldwide standard almost to have that as your jumping off point. Because that might have been inside, by the way. So if that's inside, then you get the penalty at that point. Look at it the other way, right? Imagine he's inside the box, running out of the box, right? And the two hands go on the back at that point, and then the push comes later. You get the penalty for it.
Well, that'll be Ryan, I think. In my head, I'd say that was Ryan, because you're allowed to put your hands on somebody in the box. You're allowed to put your hands on their back. You just gotta shovel them.
Yeah,
see,
I think Ian's making a lot of sense.
Yeah, and it's just played
advocate. How do you determine when a push begins, other than when you see hands going on? That's where it's tough.
Yeah, see, he played devil's advocate as well. I actually think, now, the referee hasn't made the wrong decision. I actually think it should be a penalty, because I think it should be actually when your hands come off the back, so it's actually the end of the push. But
the end of the contact.
Yeah, so the end of the contact. Now, I know that's just adding all sorts of spanners into the work. But like he says, by the letter of the law, which VAR has to go by and the referees, they ultimately have got it right.
When does the contact end, Roger? Your strikers now deliberately holding their backs against hands to make sure it never ends.
Just running with it.
Lost.
You're not far wrong.
Thanks, Ian. I do think he'd make some fair points, raises some fair questions. 01419511025. That was quite a quick hour, which means it's time for us to do this.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
No stewards inquiries, no VAR reviews, just straightforward winning and losing on Beat the Pundit tonight, hopefully. We're no stranger to a bit of a controversy, but hopefully it's straightforward. You have until 7, 01419511025, and we'll speak to you next.
This is Scottish football's league leader, Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Andy Halliday and Roger Hanna are here. It's 01419511025. Loads of time to get your calls in, talking about that cup draw. Rangers coming out with Celtic, looking back on the weekend, asking you Rangers fans, what did you take away? What can you take away from such a convincing win yesterday? In terms of the Celtic game, there was lots of late drama and an exciting cup tie. Most of the calls so far appear to be about refereeing decisions, but it's Monday night on Clyde One Super Scoreboard. That's perfectly allowable. In fact, it's almost a requirement. So keep your calls coming there, and anything else that you think we've missed, put us in our place whilst we play this.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
You got a 10 in your last game, Roger Hanna.
Yeah. Shock.
No, yeah. No. Have I not played since then?
No, I don't think so.
Tense win yesterday. 1-1.
Low scoring at the weekend. The new Andy Halliday jumper that you're wearing, do you feel like that's going to inspire you?
Oh, I think so.
Or
yes.
Restrict you?
I have been inundated with.
Has Mrs. Hannah given you the green light to wear that out?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Seriously?
Yes, Mrs. Hannah was very. She was very pro the whole idea. Yes, yes.
I can't believe that's on the screen again.
I'm speechless at it, I must admit. Fashion influenced by Andy Halliday. You were actually teaching Andy Halliday shorthand in the office. Things I did not expect to see in the office earlier on is you teaching Andy Halliday shorthand. Now give me it, my camera will be easier. So hold on. So on this, this doesn't say anything rude, does it?
No. Right, apparently.
So this says what?
An alphabet. You wanted a quick those bits
Andy
Halliday,
at the top.
Gordon Duncan, Roger Hanna. That says
Andy Halliday,
yeah.
Roger Hanna, Gordon Duncan.
It's just bad.
Gordon
for
Duncan,
me.
Roger Hanna.
And this is what?
That's the T line shorthand alphabet. I didn't realise between the Saturday Ludicus. Afternoon show and the Monday Ludicus. Night show, we'd spend so long talking about T line shorthand.
John,
and M&S jumpers.
Luckily, we can move on because John's ready for Beat the Pundit. John, how are you?
All good, guys. What about yourselves?
Not bad, John. Not bad. I'm reliably informed you played years ago against Gordon DL.
I've played a few times.
Oh, right, have you now?
I'm pretty sure Dazzler beat me the last time, but I've beat Alex Ray, Marvin Bartway, and Mark Wilson in the past.
The appearance, this guy's due a testimonial.
I beat all the easy ones.
Because I'd say nine times out of ten, it's a debutant on Beat the Pundit. But John's got 500 appearances under his belt.
He's a fair cup.
I didn't used to be, though. Hopeless when he started. He's now getting better Whatever happened to him anyway, Marvin Bartley, right?
I don't know, I think he's changed his number.
The blue side of the coin will be Andy Halliday, the red side will be Roger Hanna. So let's see how we get on. And it is blue for Andy Halliday. Okay, let's give Andy something else to listen to. John, 30 seconds, answer as many as you can, and pass if you do not know the answer.
Yep.
Let's go, 30 seconds on the clock, and your time starts now. Name any Rangers player who scored only one goal against Queen's Park yesterday.
Miofsky.
Who's the only first team Celtic player under the age of 20?
Pass.
What had more global views yesterday, Liverpool, Man City, or the Super Bowl?
Liverpool, sorry.
Tony Watt wears which shirt number for Partick Thistle?
72.
Scotland international James Wilson has left Hearts for which English team?
Tottenham.
Before Ryan Nadiri, who was the last German player to sign for Rangers?
Jörg Albert.
Okay. Mr. M&S, can you hear us?
Yes.
Good. Same set of questions. 30 seconds on the clock, and your time starts now. Name any Rangers player who scored only one goal against Queen's Park.
Miofsky.
Who's the only Celtic first team player who's under the age of 20?
Kobe Donovan.
What had more global views yesterday, Liverpool, Man City, or the Super Bowl?
Super Bowl.
Tony Watt wears which shirt number for Partick Thistle?
32.
Scotland international James Wilson has left Hearts for which English
Tottenham.
Team? Before Ryan Nadiri, who was the last German player to sign for Rangers?
Nellinger.
Who is the longest serving manager in the Scottish Premiership?
Not sure. Stephen Robinson.
Okay. What are you thinking, John?
I think he's done me by one or two.
Oh,
I know I've got a few in, like, but
let's find out.
He got the one more question at the end. So
he's never been known for his pace, John, I have to say, but he did manage to get through them a bit quicker. Let's find out. Name any Rangers player who scored only one. Focus. Don't worry about your league table yet. All will be revealed. You only need to wait 10 seconds.
Well, but I can tell by your excitement in you.
That what?
I've got a couple wrong and this is tight.
Well, just you wait and see. Name any Rangers player who scored only one goal yesterday against Queen's Park. Chukwuanyi or Miofsky? You both got it. One all. The only Celtic first team player under the age of 20 is Colby Donovan. Andy Halliday starts on minus one, so it's now a level game. What had more global views yesterday, Liverpool City or the Super Bowl? It is Liverpool City by some distance.
So wow.
Hold on. Americans and Roger Hanna. There's the only people who care about the Super Bowl.
Alright.
So take the population of America and add one to it.
Yeah.
Hanna. And that's it.
Four. We actually had four watching it in the house and the dog.
Oh, there you go. Apparently 700 to 750 million for Liverpool City. And only 220 for the Super Bowl. So John leads by one. Tony Watt wears 32, which means Andy Halliday equalises. You're hopeless at shirt numbers as well.
Tony,
because he's your pal.
Good.
Okay.
He's 32 at Motherwell as
Scotland
well.
International James Wilson. He's got one cap. He has left Hearts for Spurs. You both got it. Before Ryan Nadiri, who was the last German player to sign for Rangers? It is Christian Nerlinger. Andy Halliday. John went for George Alberts. And I even edited this on the move because I glanced down at the next question and I've told you I'm sick of this. See questions that are just on the lap of the pundits. The question was, who's the only English team Kevin Thompson played for? He was at Middlesbrough with Andy Halliday. So I said no. The red pen went through it straight away and I moved on to who's the longest. See, John, I'm trying to do him out of answers. Who's the longest serving manager in the Premiership? It is Stephen Robinson. So Andy Halliday, you've won it by a couple at the end. Hard lines, John.
Aye, no bother.
Who, you're a Rangers fan as well, John, is that right?
It is indeed, yeah.
What did you make of yesterday?
Better than last year against Queen's Park.
Well, that's an understatement.
Aye, by some distance.
Is that but, it? Is that all you can say for it?
I don't know how much we can take away from it. Yeah, we've done good. Didn't give them much of a chance, but it's always, it's never a bad thing to score great goals, is it? So the new guys getting in the act as well, so yeah. We'll see how it goes.
I'm never really sure how to judge it because if Rangers, well, Rangers played Annan in the previous round. If Rangers had a League Two team at home, I don't think you would necessarily predict that they would score eight.
No.
So to do it against a Championship team, nobody's suggesting you should get carried away, but as John says, it must be a good thing. It must have a level of.
That's what's 13 goals in back to back home games at Ibrox last weekend. I know the first five, it was against 10 man Kilmarnock, But you can only really beat the team that's put in front of you. And I think there'll be, you know, it's bound to boost confidence if you score 13 goals in 5 days.
Is John's point there about some of the new players, is that sort of more important, Andy, or worth referencing rather than whether the score was, you know, 4 or 5 or whether you get to 8? Is the kind of knock-on effect maybe more important of what you got from these players getting more minutes, scoring goals or whatever?
Yeah, definitely. Cause I think Rangers had to sign players in January that were going to immediately improve the starting 11, and we all know how difficult that is, especially in what is a difficult transfer window to recruit. Now, it was also areas where they needed bodies. They only had one left back, Jaden Magoma, all season long. I think two Romans has came in, completely different profile to Jaden Magoma, sorry, and I think he's really impressed in his first two appearances. I watched Ryan Nadiri for the last couple of games. I think a big question mark over Yusuf Chimiti is, I think a lot of his good work's outside the penalty area, but I think already you're seeing with Ryan Nadiri, a lot of the stuff he's doing is in the penalty box. It's within the width of the goal frame. I think he came on, he got a couple of great chances against Kilmarnock. He's then followed that up, obviously, with a double. And then Chukwuanyi. I think Chukwuanyi, arguably for me, has been the most impressive out the four. I think it was an area where Rangers were still pretty strong. I think Conor Barron, Diamandi and Raskin, I think, are well thought of. But you just look at the profile. I think 6'4", real powerhouse in and out of possession. You know, I think at this moment in time, I think the January transfer window's looking like a very, very good one for Rangers.
Thank you very much to John. Not enough to beat Andy Halliday on Beat the Pundit, but there we go, another win for him. Try your luck tomorrow, bit easier on a Tuesday. 0141 951 1025. Jordan is on the line. Hi Jordan.
Evening gents, how you doing?
Good, what's your point?
Evening Andy, evening Roger.
How you doing, Jordan?
That is some jumper, Roger. It looks a lot different in real life than it does on that picture. I'll tell you that.
That's a very fair assessment, Jordan.
I believe there's still a few online if you're looking for one, Jordan.
I'm sure there'll be more than a few online.
This isn't a great promotion for MNS.
Anyway, Jordan, what are you thinking?
Sorry, Andy, you should have got Sharon Osborne to wear it. She was Sharon to wear it. Honestly, back to my point anyway. It's comical to hear all these calls and comments from Celtic leading pundits and podcasts over the past few weeks about referee and SPFL corruption. Because if anything, Dundee were done out of that game on Saturday. There was 5 minutes put up on that board. I'm pretty sure Tierney was injured before the 5 minutes went up. Then on the commentary, they said they're going to play 7. Did they not score in the 9th minute?
No.
So, when did they score?
I thought it was the 7th minute, Jordan.
Well, I thought it was the 9th, so I stand corrected.
So, this is hyper detailed analysis. Jordan, let's explain what happened, right? Because I've seen this as well. I don't know if the tensions are just heightened here or whatever. There was 5 minutes added on. Kieran Tierney was down for, I think it was about a minute, yeah, right? And the goal was scored 95 minutes and 56 seconds. Every week on this show, I do it every week to try and guard against stuff like this. When time goes up, I always say it's a minimum of. Celtic scored 56 seconds after the 5 minutes, Jordan. Is that actually where we've got to, that this is a thing?
It's funny that they're phoning up every week saying, oh, referee corruption, this, Derek McInnes shouldn't be saying that. Well, it's a fact Celtic don't get red cards in the league. They didn't get one for, I think, about 18 months, was it? They got their first red card and they started saying, no, it's not a red card. But they clearly got the favouritism of the referee in that game. That's all that's from watching it.
But Jordan, favouritism is not playing the allowable time.
Minutes, 5 minutes, the game should have been stopped.
No, because Kieran Tierney was down for a minute within that.
He was down before
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. He was down within that time. Jordan, this is standard stuff everywhere, and I'm convinced that in loads of leagues and loads of games, nobody cares. But see when it's this like Celtic Rangers thing, everybody seems to lose their mind. 56 seconds over the 5 minutes.
Right, well, during which
Kieran Tierney was down injured. There's loads of things, Jordan. This is what we're here for. See these refereeing debates where you say, I think that's a red, I think it's not. We must be scraping the barrel with debates like this, seriously. 56 seconds over 5 minutes when a player was injured within that.
I have to say, you know, I watched the game after we get back to the studio on Saturday night, Gordon, and the timekeeping aspect of it wasn't something that particularly, you know, troubled me.
Obviously not.
I knew Tierney was down. A new time would be added on. You know, the commentators have sort of made it clear that this was going to happen, and you know, the goal comes.
I think play was stopped. I mean, I can't believe I'm going this specific on it, Andy. Play was stopped at 88:55. Right, so he is down before that, as Jordan says. But you still, at that point, they're coming to. And the thing is, none of this stuff's done in secret. You know, this is all getting communicated from fourth official and whatever to say that here's the time you're going to add on, oh, but we've got another stoppage now. Yeah. So that, honestly, I don't know if it's, maybe I'm fortunate to have like heard the communications, or see if you're working on a live game for Sky or whatever. Yeah. You hear the commentator say, we think there's going to be blah added on, because that decision is getting made up towards the end. But then in the last minute of the game, there's another injury. So I'll stand corrected to an extent, Jordan. You're factually right. Tierney goes down before it. But then there's a minute. So that's where the next minute comes from. I don't know. I just didn't think that was a controversy, I must admit.
No, I don't think there's any controversy to be had. You know, the 5 minutes was added. It was a minimum of five added. Kieran Tierney was down for a period of time before it. Actually watching it live, you know, I think Dundee cleared the ball as it goes, 95-something. And you actually feel at that point, it's probably Celtic's last attack, but legitimately, because you knew there was going to be added on time for Kieran Tierney being down. And then obviously from what was probably their last attack, they go and score the goal.
Because I'm sure people have been sending me all day to make sure that this is mentioned, and I can't remember the details. At 120 minutes, did Dundee not have a chance at 122 minutes?
Yes.
Or something like that.
So slashed wide, yeah.
So, you know, where do we go with this? So what, the officials were deliberately trying to give Celtic more time during the 90 minutes, but then wanted to give Dundee more time at the end. I think we're probably going round in circles on it. What did you make of the draw, Jordan?
Oh, the draw's fantastic.
You happy with that?
And so, yeah, I am, because it's also good to see that there's going to be a different final. I mean, we could also see maybe Andy's team in the final. So, no, it's good to see, but I don't think we'll give them a chance to get added time, to get an equaliser, to go to extra time. But can I ask you one thing, Gordon? What do you think? Do you not think it would be fair for the fans to hear some of the communication live? Why do the pundits get to hear it, but not the fans? So when the game stops, why can't it go to a feed of the VAR speaking to the referee? Because we all seem to be left in the dark, and we have to listen to like the commentator saying, oh, VAR looking at this, and VAR looking at that. You've had calls all night saying, VAR didn't look at this, and you're telling the people, yeah, they did. Mm-hmm. I stand corrected with my assessment of 9 minutes added on, but this would maybe clear some of these arguments up. That's my point.
Well, I think there's definitely a wider discussion about what, look at in England, they announce it in the stadiums and stuff like that.
That's a good thing.
What I would say, honestly, it seems like it's a big thing because we're talking about it right now. Do we really want to hear them discussing how long is going to be added on? Seriously. What I would like to hear is big decisions, for sure. I think the more insight, the better. But this thing feels important tonight. But you're telling me that worldwide in football, we should be rolling out hearing how long it's going to be added on? I can't get my head around that. But maybe it's just a personal thing. But Jordan does make it obviously a wider point. I think that's one of the biggest, it's one of the biggest drawbacks of VAR. Everybody feels they're in the dark, don't they?
Yeah, they do. But I was going to ask you, I mean, you're closer to Willie Collum in the VAR review show. Has there been talk of introducing that in Scotland? You know, the referee being mic'd up and coming back onto the pitch to explain the decision to those within the stadium?
I'm sure the last time it was officially asked, the phrase was something like monitoring the situation.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just as a generalisation, do you like that?
I don't love it.
I actually really don't like it.
I must admit. It's like, I'm nosy as well, you know, and obviously I'm quite close to this stuff. Does it add that much? I don't know.
Well, my thing, my big negative towards VAR is pace of play. I think that just adds on the.
I think football. We're going to go back to that Man City Liverpool game that you gave up on yesterday, Andy. But I thought when Craig Pawson came back on and explained why Dominic Szoboszlai was sent off and the goal was disallowed,
that did bring
a bit of clarity.
Have you heard some of the PA systems in Scottish grounds?
That is a valid point. So,
just need to get somebody. Make sure the speakers are clear enough. Mm-hmm. That's all we need. It'll be lost in translation. Thank you, Jordan. Good time to call. We'll get you on next.
You are the voice of Scottish football. Call 01419511025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Roger Hanna and Andy Halliday are here. It's 01419511025. Keep the calls coming. Got loads to get through this evening. I'm sure we're going to quickly set up the full-time teaser and then bring in Ross on the line. The sensible donkey, your old adversary, has sent the question in. Can you name the last eight men to have signed for an SPFL team and they've scored against Scotland for England, Wales or Republic of Ireland? So who are the last eight men who've signed for an SPFL team and they've scored against Scotland for England, Wales or Republic of Ireland?
You just mentioned one of the Ox.
Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. I suspect this is what inspired the question. And if you look at the sensible donkey, he's worded it very carefully because it doesn't say the last eight men who've played for an SPFL team, because he's not played yet. So that's maybe your clue in there. So well done, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. And not only has he scored against Scotland for England once, he's done it twice. Once at Hampden and once at Celtic Park.
I could be leaning on you quite a lot here.
What about Robert Earnshaw?
Robert Earnshaw. These are all going to bring back really bad memories, I feel like, these answers. Is it not four times?
Yeah, I could be right, yeah. Oh my
goodness. Aaron Ramsey?
Yes. He has scored a couple for Wales against Scotland. Let's leave it there then. I think that's actually quite doable for men of your intellectual capacity. Who are the last eight men who've signed for an SPFL team? They've scored against Scotland for England, Wales or Republic of Ireland. The first one was Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, and I think that's partly what Ross wants to discuss on the line. How smooth is that, Ross?
Smooth as anything, Gordon. How are you? Right?
Good. You?
I'm good. Recovering after Saturday, right? It was heart palpitations. And I just think that the game on Saturday itself, we were miles off it. To be fair, if I'm going to be honest, I thought Dundee probably deserved to go through. But I think in terms of the way the goal happened and then getting the goal in extra time, I think it will probably kickstart us now. And I think that's maybe a wee wake-up call for how close we were about to get the cup. So I think in terms of the signing as well, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, I personally think that he'll be the one that will come in and he could tip the title going back to Celtic Park. So I think that signing alone is probably enough to hopefully tip us to win the league.
What gives you so much confidence of that, Ross? Because you won't need me to point out the obvious potential drawbacks of not having played, being without a club, having bad injuries, that sort of stuff. So what makes you so confident all of that is overcome to the extent that not only does he play and feature, but is the difference maker?
I think the fact that he's won the Champions League, he's a Champions League winner, and I think his experience of playing at the highest level with Arsenal and Liverpool and stuff, I think that will come into fruition, and I think he can share that experience within the guys that we've got in there that have maybe not won a title before, or maybe I'm not used to winning league titles. So I think having him alongside Callum McGregor will be the total difference maker, I think, in this title.
It's funny because we spoke about it quite a bit last week, and then he signed at the weekend, all the games were happening, and like I said, it's almost like it's been forgotten about already and moved on. It's quite a big deal one way or the other, just because of the size of his reputation, his name. Ross is very confident that he makes a difference.
I've no idea. We don't know, and we won't know until we actually see him with our own eyes. He has a fantastic CV. I think he won the FA Cup three times with Arsenal, and then he went to Liverpool and won the Champions League, Club World Cup, the UEFA Super Cup, the Premier League, the League Cup. He's done about everything in his career. He's got 35 caps for England. He's twice come up here and scored goals for England against Scotland in Glasgow. He won the Turkish Cup when he was Besiktas, which is probably, you know, an indicator of his most recent form and success. I think he's a different player now to the one who broke through many, many years ago at Southampton and then Arsenal. We don't know. He hasn't played a competitive game since, I think, May last year. If it's the old Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, he'll be a sensational signing. But we just don't know until we see him.
Yeah, again, I get that, but give me a bit more of a prediction on it, Andy. And I know it can't be based on much.
I'll give you a
much.
Bit more. I think it's a risk, but I think it's a risk worth taking given the length of contract. A chance for Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain to prove his fitness levels.
That's funny you use that word. I don't think it's a risk at all. I think it's a no-risk signing. If he doesn't perform, he doesn't perform. You've not paid £15 million to get him. You've paid just his wages. I think it's actually a no-risk deal for Celtic.
But listen, I think there also has to be an expectation that he's not played football for 9 months, so I don't think it's going to be someone that's going to immediately impact Celtic's starting 11. But I completely take on Ross's point about his big game experience, his know-how in title races and European competition. But you know how much he can potentially influence the Celtic starting 11 from now to the end of the season, I suppose, remains to be seen.
Some very confident Rangers fans earlier, Ross happy with the draw and believing they'll come through it. What was your reaction when you saw them come out last night?
Yeah, delighted. I wanted Rangers in the draw. I wanted Rangers a Partick Thistle, so delighted to get them. I think I know people look at it in hindsight and think, well, Rangers are just back off the back in 8-0 win and we're just scraping by Dundee. But I think this sort of game against Rangers in the next round is the kind of game we need, because I think if we got a Dunfermline or a Partick Thistle, we would be doing exactly what we've done on Saturday night. So I think a game against Rangers is a sort of game to kickstart Celtic. And I think if we can beat Rangers in the next round to get to Hampden, again, I'm going off topic here, but I firmly believe, I think if results go our way this week, it'll then kick us into action. And I generally think that if Hibs do as a turn and Murrow do as a turn, I could possibly see Celtic doing a double this year.
Wow, it's a lot to happen. What about the, I was going to say, the other new signings? You saw Mvuka in the first half of the weekend. Adamu obviously comes on and has his moment. What did you take away from it?
The boy, I can't remember his name, the winger, is it made?
Mvuka's the winger, yeah.
I generally thought he looked all right, and then he got hooked at half time, and I was wondering maybe is he not to match fitness. I don't know what the reason was, but I generally thought he looked all right, and I thought the other boy came on, Adamu. I think there's a player in there. I know we've only seen glimpses of him, and it's the first time he's played, but I think he looks good, and I think if we can get these players up to the level that we expect, then I generally think they'll come good. I think obviously the thing is that the Celtic fans are up in arms because they're loan signings and they've not actually spent any money and stuff, but some of these loan signings are actually ones that work out, so I wouldn't be too downhearted that we've not actually spent any money. So I think in terms of the quality that being brought in, it has been questioned in the past, but listen, we just need to go right now, and if these boys can get us a title, then I think the Celtic fans will be forgiven.
And Vuka, I've seen mixed assessments, because I think Ross is one of the more positive ones I've seen or heard. A few people felt like, you know, look through social media, which can be an unforgiving place, that maybe started brightly and then tailed off. Other people weren't impressed at all.
What's your assessment? I would have. I thought he did start brightly, had a couple of nice touches, and then he kind of tailed off and get substituted at half time. It'll be fascinating to see the Celtic lineup for these two games against Livi and Kelly. The likes of Dyson Maida may well come back into people's thoughts. Has Adamu done enough to earn a start ahead of Kvanchara? I don't know. Yang seems to be a popular pick, but you know, if Maida's there on one side, Tonekte surely has to start Wednesday night after the way he influenced the whole game coming off the bench at the weekend. So, as we said earlier on in the show, I think the arrival of the likes of Mvuka, Adamu and now Oxley Chamberlain, it has deepened and strengthened Martin O'Neill's options.
Yeah, I gave you guys assessment. I thought he started the game okay, but I think that Mvuka has been brought in to make a difference at the top end of the pitch. I don't think he was involved enough in the final third, but of course, you know, debut, long way to go. I think at this point in time, when you look at, you know, Celtic's recruitment in the January transfer window, I think the one that really has stepped up and been a clear improvement in the squad for me has been Julian Araujo. I think he's been really impressive, and I think, I'm not sure the Celtic have a buy clause in his loan agreement, but well, regardless, I think he's been a real upgrade.
We said that in the show on Saturday, actually, as we were watching the first half hour of the game, Andy. He gives Celtic what Alistair Johnston gave Celtic. You know, he pushes up, he gets involved in the play. You know, he's an added attacking player, if you like, from that right back, and he's more forward thinking, I think, than either Donovan or Ralston. You can understand why he's hit the ground running, get into that team.
Thank you very much to Ross on 01419511025. Keep your calls coming in as we reflect on the weekend and also look ahead to a big midweek, as in tomorrow, an Edinburgh derby. They're always big, and we talk about bragging rights and form out the window and all the cliches you associate with derbies, but one that could have an incredible knock-on effect at the top of the league. Excited?
Yeah, it can. I think a big ambition that Hibs will have from now to the end of the season, now that they're out of the Scottish Cup, will obviously be to finish as high as they possibly can on the table, but to derail any hopes of Hearts potentially winning this league title. And you know, I do feel that both derbies have been entertaining for different reasons. I thought the first one wasn't a great watch in terms of quality, but I thought it was all action. You obviously get that late injury time winner by Craig Halkett, and then completely roles reversed. I thought it was full of quality at Easter Road, specifically in Hibs's end. Hearts had an unbelievable charge towards the last 15-20 minutes of the game. Nearly got an equaliser at the end if it wasn't for Salinger and goals. And I think it's all set for another great game tomorrow. I think both squads look a little bit different. Obviously Hearts due to players not being available, and Hibs due to players that they brought in January. So I think it'll be a cracker, and I've got to say it's one I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah, I fancy Hearts. Anytime they've had a setback this season, they've shown a bit of resilience and bounced back from it. It was a setback losing at Easter Road over the festive period. I think they will feel the Hibs won. That spell in the first hour at Easter Road is probably as bad as Hearts have played at any stage this season. And it's not really a fixture you want to be performing like that, and Andy, so I think Hearts have come flying out. They don't have Halkett at the back, they don't have Devlin in midfield, they don't have Shanklin up top, but I actually think the squad is strong enough to withstand those absences. At the minute, I would expect Hearts to win the game.
We don't give a lot of headed goals go over the weekends, do we? If Andy Sutter was that weekend, what a header that was to win the game against Dundee United, incredible.
That's a great way to arrive, isn't it? It feels like very, very early, Roger, but there's a couple of things when you talk about how good transfer business is. We said in isolation, if you get £7 million for Kieran Bowie, that in isolation feels like really good business. If you can replace him with Dane Scarlett and Antti Suttu, who go on to have
Owen Elding,
the same impact or more of an impact, then it's really, really good business.
Yeah.
And I know it's early, but those two look in different ways like a handful, don't they?
Yes, they do. And listen, Eli Ewan's been playing well recently as well. They've just got some absentees as well, and I don't think they're as well covered for losing big men. Grant Hanley at the back, if Mulligan and McGrath still aren't right in the middle of the park,
McGrath apparently trained today and has a chance.
They are big players for Hibernian, and you've seen in a couple of games there when Mulligan and McGrath weren't there. They don't really have natural replacements for them.
What sort of, because everybody again will make the right noise and say there's always pressure on both teams in a derby, which is true, but also what do you think Hearts are sort of dealing with at the moment? You can just imagine the two extremes. Win this game tomorrow, pile all the pressure on Rangers in particular, because they've got a so-called harder fixture on Wednesday. But flip that, Hearts lose the game, everybody on the outside is going to be saying, that's it, you know, that's it. They're still in a really nice position that they would have taken at the start, but everybody will write them off for the league if they lose tomorrow, won't they?
Yeah, potentially. I think you look at the game at Tannadice last weekend, where Hearts had an opportunity to get extra points before Rangers and Celtic had the opportunity to play the game. They win 3-0, and the very next day, when the pressure was back on Rangers, they dropped points at Easter Road. Then during the week, well, when roles were reversed, they're then the team that's chasing in terms of games played. They drop points against St Mirren. So it's now again the onus and the pressure's back on Hearts to try and, you know, keep that cushion at the top of the table, and then watch Rangers and Celtic results tomorrow to see if they still get a cushion at the top of the league. But I must admit, I do agree with Roger. I do still make Hearts favourites going into the game tomorrow. I think any time they've been tested, regardless of injuries, you know, games against Rangers, Celtic, I think it's been... given we've had a pretty big sample size, I think it's an anomaly, sorry, now that performance at Easter Road.
The first derby of last season, I'm sure it was, the teams were 11th and 12th going into the game.
Yeah.
It's quite a different set of circumstances this time.
Very much so. And the one thing we haven't tested about Hearts is they've been front runners all the way through. We don't know how Hearts would react if they fell to second or third in this title race. People are assuming Celtic will take 6 points from Killy and Livy this week. If Hearts were not to pick up, for argument's sake, 4 points from these two games against Hibs and Rangers, they might not be top of the league by Sunday night. What would that do to the belief of the players, to the belief of the supporters, to the belief of Derek McInnes, that they can stay for the long haul in this title race? That's why I think this week is probably more important for Hearts than it is for either Rangers or Celtic.
I've got a task for you. You're the man for this. Oh. I am now keen to know, just in the event of Hearts not winning it, which champion has spent the least amount of time at the top of the league throughout the season? I don't know the answer. I'm genuinely, I'm curious.
Surely it must be Rangers, because I don't think they've been top at any stage.
No, but they've not won it
this season.
They've not won it.
Somebody's won it.
Oh, sorry, sorry.
No, that's what I mean. So let's say Rangers don't hit the front until end of February, whatever.
I'm with you. Yeah.
And they go and win it. Would that be the shortest amount of time that the eventual winner has spent at the top? Type of thing I think about when I'm trying to get to sleep at night. 01419511025. What have you two got in the teaser? We're looking for the last 8 men who've signed for an SPFL team and scored against Scotland for England, Wales or Republic of Ireland. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, Aaron Ramsey, Robert Earnshaw,
Robbie Keane.
Yes. Do you know the only thing, just to, I mean, who am I to pick up the sensible donkey, a man whose attention to detail is much better than mine? SPFL team maybe just muddies the water because it's only been the SPFL for a while.
Okay,
but
you.
No, you can go back. You can go back.
Craig Bellamy.
Craig Bellamy is not one of the answers.
I'm wondering about Adam Eder.
No.
No. And the other former Celt, I wonder about Daryl Murphy.
Nope. Okay, we'll give you some thinking time. We'll get the rest of the answers when we return.
Tackle the headlines. 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Into the final part of tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Andy Halliday and Roger Hanna are here. Plenty of time to get your calls in, so please do. And we've got a good full time teaser ticking along as well, which is as follows. Who were the last 8 men to sign for a Scottish team who've scored against Scotland for England, Wales or Republic of Ireland? You've got Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, Aaron Ramsey of Wales, Robert Earnshaw also of Wales, and Robbie Keane.
John Hartson.
Yes, well done. Oh, any others?
We are getting back a bit now, aren't we?
Oh, I don't like that silence.
What about Ben Woodburn of Hearts and Wales?
No.
No.
Okay, I don't know if you need help. Well, we are going back a bit for some of them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll just point you in the loosest direction. You're still looking for a Welshman. That's a cracker. That's a real cracker, the Welshman.
Mm-hmm.
The English one, the English one's remaining. You're just not quite grasped how far back you're allowed to go.
Right, Gaza.
Yes. Okay.
No way.
Yeah. Heard of him? Wow. Aware of his work? You ever seen his goal he scored against Scotland?
I was there, Gordon.
Were you really that far back? Working.
Yes.
You working by then?
Yeah.
God, you are old. Jeez.
I was working.
Shorthand.
I was working several years before that.
Were you?
Of course I was. I started working in 1988.
And teach Andy how to write in shorthand, and Paul Gascoigne lobbed the ball over Colin Hendry and
whacked it past Andy Gorham.
Nah, don't bother, I've relived that enough. Okay, 01419511025. Let's hear from Jim, who's on the line in Partick. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how you doing, lads?
Good, Jim, how are you?
I'm great.
What are you thinking?
I've got one thought that has been in my mind for a while, and it's about Scotland. Got a big World Cup coming up. I was looking at the Celtic lineup. I was looking at the Rangers lineup, and I think there's maybe about 2 or 3 Scottish players in there, and I find it quite upsetting to see that. But anyway, my main point is about Rangers. I'm really kind of confused about Rangers at the moment. I've been following Rangers for nearly 40 years, and a lot of the callers are on tonight, and they're saying that, you know, there's a potential for winning a Scottish Cup and winning a league. And it kind of worries me because I don't think Danny Rowe knows he's starting 11. I don't think he's anywhere close to knowing he's starting 11. When you look at the squad that played Queen's Park, Mikey Moore, never started. Raskin never started. Magoma never started. Gassama never started. Asgard never started. And neither did Butland or Suter. And these are guys that have seen us through.
Is that not just a classic case of mixing the squad up, though, against Queen's Park, no? And giving other guys some game time?
I think that's absolutely spot on. But at the same time, we've got huge games coming up against Motherwell on Wednesday. We've got games coming up against Celtic. We've got the Scottish Cup now coming up. And I honestly don't think he knows what his lineup is. It's not only the lineup. You know, I was thinking back to Russell Martin, and I didn't really want Russell Martin as a manager. And one of the main reasons that I didn't want him as a manager was because he was stuck in his ways with a formation that he stuck with at Southampton, and he stuck with it at Rangers. And to be honest, that was his downfall. And I wanted somebody to come in that would be able to adapt and change in terms of the opposition that he was playing against.
Now, let me put that some of the stuff, Jim, if you can. Just a little bit push for time towards the end of the show, so Andy can maybe pick up on and Roger on some of the stuff Jim mentioned.
I think in Noni's best start 11, I think it's pretty difficult considering he's only brought in he's just brought in four players that have only got a handful of games under their belt. But when Rangers go to Celtic Park like they did 3 weeks ago, and then when they play Motherwell on Wednesday, and then they play Hearts at the weekend, whatever Danny Rowe's team is, that's what he feels his best 11 is, because there's two massive games that Rangers have got over the next 6 days, and what he puts on that field he believes is the best opportunity for them to pick 6 points. Now the Queen's Park game, Jade McGomas played loads of games, Raskin plays every single week. For me, that was just a standard case of rotation.
I don't think there's such a thing in football anymore as a starting 11. You look at,
don't say it, don't talk to me about finishers.
No, I wasn't going to, because I know it irritates you. I heard the phrase used at the weekend with the Six Nations rugby starting again. Always have a chuckle. You speak to your own man, James Bertolasco. He will have an 11 that might play against Celtic, but you pick a different 11 against different opposition. And I think Danny Rule will be the same.
That's Mercedes Jens to you.
Okay. I think Danny Rule would have a first choice 11, maybe to play Celtic, but a first choice 11 if he was playing Hearts away from home. I think the big squads nowadays, it's full of all the sports scientists. They'll give you all different types of advice. I think the days of that says first choice 11, I think they're gone.
Thank you, Jim. I want to squeeze in one more if we can. Let's go Pat, who's on. Hi, Pat.
How you doing, guys? All right?
Good. What's your thoughts tonight, Pat?
I just wanted to say I'm disgraced by the way Celtic fans left the stadium the other day for Martin O'Neill. This guy's come up here and try to help us out. Twice he's tried to save our bacon. And the fans could do at least to stay and watch the stadium and watch the players play. I'm old school. I was born up. My dad brought me up to be a proper Celtic fan. Get behind the team. What is nonsense? It's going on and on and on. And it's still going to change. They're both going nowhere. Get behind the team. Martin Neal's trying to do the best he can. And he got this attitude for the fans. It's doing my nothing, to be quite honest.
Said at the weekend, Roger, it's hard to know the exact extent of that boycott, because at the same weekend last season they played Rovers in the cup.
Does Pat not mean not the ones that boycotted, the ones who walked out at 1-0 down?
Both. I was kind of lumping it all together though. For us, the starting, the big headline before the game was the boycott. They had a low crowd at this stage against Raith Rovers last season in the cup. Exactly, so I don't know how many extra dropped off. And then, as Pat says, thereafter, Pat's general point and all that is, because Pat's referring to those who's not been proper Celtic supporters or word to that effect. I'm sure those people would defend that. Where does Celtic go with this stuff?
I don't know. I've never understood it, Gordon. You know, you wouldn't go to the cinema and leave 5 minutes before the end. And I was paying to, and I still do it from time to time, paying to get into the football. I always wait to the final whistle because I've paid my money and I'm afraid I missed something. And the Celtic supporters are left early, certainly missed something at the weekend.
We talked earlier about Celtic's ability to score late goals over the last decade or so. So what the Celtic fans that did leave was miss what was the best part of the game for a Celtic's point of view. So
what about the boycott stuff then, bigger picture?
Someone will need to explain to me, and it will, the explanation will come either from the Celtic fans collective or callers on the show, whether or not they felt the boycott was effective at the weekend, and the boycott did for them what they wanted it to do. Because, as you say, Gordon, on the face of it, last year it was Raith Rovers at home, this season it's Dundee at home, neither in the season ticket, both 5:30 kick-offs.
So you need to wait to a bigger game then.
Someone will need to say to me whether they thought the call for the boycott was heeded in the numbers that they wanted.
And you'll
see
lots of people saying now in the last 24 hours, would you boycott the game against Rangers in the cup?
Yeah, but listen, I don't know. The Celtic Fans Collective may well choose a higher profile game than a Dundee game, because they have hinted, in fact, they've done more than hinted, they've stated they have more ideas, more plans that they've yet to announce.
Okay, thank you very much to Pat. I did say we were pushed for time, my apologies, we're nearly done. Let's round off the teaser. Who are the last 8 men to sign for an SPFL team to score against Scotland, for England, Wales or Republic of Ireland? You've got Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, Paul Gascoigne, Aaron Ramsey, Robert Earnshaw, John Hartson and Robbie Keane.
Simon Church.
That's
Aberdeen
and
Wales.
Aberdeen and Wales.
Not sure if he's related to Charlotte.
Indeed, he was.
What a shout.
And that mean one left?
Yeah, one to go.
That's an easy one as well.
Is it really?
Yeah. Going way back. Way back.
Way back. Is that an England game?
Yes.
Pre-Gascoigne?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Is that Bob?
No.
Oh, no.
You've heard of him? Neither you nor I were born.
You're talking 1980s.
That jumper was in
fashion. He wasn't born. That jumper, a Falkirk legend.
That jumper was in fashion first time around.
Chris Wardle.
No.
No.
86.
Oh, he was definitely born.
Oh, I thought Chris Wardle scored in 88 along with Steve Gould at Hampden. Maybe not.
Sensible donkeys maybe done not.
No. 86, 85, Coffey scored in the Rouse Cup.
Same competition.
86.
2-1 England.
Oh, this is going to annoy me now.
Former Rangers player, former Motherwell, Hibs, Inverness manager.
Terry Butcher.
I said no.
I wrote Terry Butcher, he said no.
I'm going to have these two fallen out by the end of the night.
Oh, listen.
Thank you very much to Andy Halliday and to Roger Hanna. We are back tomorrow from 6 and Edinburgh Derby with huge knock-on effects at the top of the table. Make sure you join us.